Hey everyone, welcome to another REI Vault weekly team huddle call. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016. Welcome to today's call. It's going to probably be a small or a short call. We only have a couple of people on today's call, which could be good news, bad news, great news, or no news. excited to have you. I see a few people, and this is an opportunity to ask any questions that you would like. They can be technical, podio, marketing, direct mail, real estate, fire away. Chris and I really don't come with any agenda. It's just an opportunity to connect and answer questions. We love talking about real estate, and don't be shy. So whatever question you have, there's no wrong answer or wrong question. And then again, normally what you can do is we're going to open up this call just because a few of you are on. We'll probably just open it up and let the lines be live. Normally we keep it muted. And you could press *5 if you have a question, which is normally how we do it. And then if you ever have any need of any sort, a question, a change request, recommendation, you know, always email support@reivault.com. And if it's a real estate related question, always email dealhelp@reivault.com. Those go, they get expedited. Anything that's real estate related gets expedited. To Chris and I, we've got about 35 people on the team, and so always email support as opposed to going to somebody direct. And we ask for 24-hour notice for any changes, but we try to answer in 24 minutes and give you superior service. And so with that, Chris, any updates for the week before we open this up?
No, you know, just a quick update. On last week's call, I kind of discussed the process that I followed for the application that I put in for an assistant, and ends up just so you guys can listen into the previous call, but just the update, ended up being that I have to rework the ad, because what happened is I created an ad that was kind of mixing a bunch of stuff together. And in the end, I think it gave me a mix of some people that could be good for real estate, some people that could be good for online marketing, but nothing really that was a solid person for just pure admin. And so what I'm going to do with that is I'm going to change the ad to make it more, because what happens is that I still got people that might be viable, but all of them I still would have to run through an interview process and also a COBE test, and so that can kind of get pricey. So what was recommended to me is to really do an ad, because I'm looking for an admin person, something that is an admin person that is very meticulous, more so than me. I need to put them through some hoops. So it would be where I would put out the ad, and their replies would entail them replying in particular ways, particular font sizes, in particular subject lines, and everything had to be very, very precise to the T, to where only those people who actually follow that very precisely would then be then sent to the next stage. Because for that position, I needed a high follow-through in the COBE score. I'm a 7. So I really need an 8 or 9, or at least a 7. And so the interesting thing is I actually ended up finding somebody for acquisitions by chance. And it just... I just happened to be interviewing them, and all of a sudden as I'm talking to them, I'm like, oh, wow, this person would be great. And he ended up being a COBE score of a 7 on the fact finder. They were a 5 on follow-through, but a 7 on quick start, and a 3 in implementer, which the 7 in quick start and the 5 on follow-through would be perfect for that position. And she had been doing it for another real estate investor. Ends up being that she had a family thing, that she was there for another real estate investor for 5 years. She ended up having a family situation, had to take a leave of absence, left that investor, took care of the situation, and now is back in the workforce. And actually, the source came because the guy who she used to work with, he was on my marketing list, and he actually forwarded the email to her, and she applied, and we had a great conversation. So she's going to be starting next week, but that's kind of like the update on the process. So a lot of maneuvering around in that process to, you know, I got something good out of it, but I didn't really get exactly what I wanted, so I have to kind of review the process. but I wanted to mention that because I had a call yesterday, last week, I kind of dove into the whole entire process that I followed for that.
Yeah, Chico, I've had a couple of requests that have come in, or one was Steve Carlson this morning, but having the job application kind of process you have an assistant, but one is for a sales acquisition manager. The actual words in the application for a sales acquisition manager and the process, people would really like that. And
yeah.
Also, following the EOS model from the book Rocket Fuel and Traction, Steve had the request for a job description for sort of an office manager / integrator. I'm seeing people that are also looking to, you know, that they're really good at sales, but they really want Envision for their business, but they're looking for sort of an office manager to take it to the next level. You know, Steve Carlson's got a strong enough business and enough revenue coming in, but he'd like to have somebody strong as an integrator / office manager and putting that on sort of the roadmap. Those are two requests. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that the admin person, that's the one that I have to kind of revise the process. That one would be what maybe Steve is looking for, because he wants somebody to look after the details and be meticulous about systems and processes. And the interesting thing is that with that particular position, it has to be just, you have to look at your follow through, and that person just has to be higher than you. There's a base, but they have to be higher than you. So that's that one, and then the acquisitions, pure acquisition role, that also is on my deck as well. So both of those I'm planning on fleshing out. The other thing I was going to mention about we were just talking about the office. I was just going back. You know, one of the things that was said, just the importance of the follow-through score. The example that was given to me, we use Infusionsoft, right, for the for our marketing. And one of the example was given to me was, hey, if you're a 7 and somebody's a 5, and they're working on your Infusionsoft account, you're going to get really annoyed very quickly at how they organize tags and how they put things in place. And I was like, yeah, because one of the guys that we have that's working with us on an Infusionsoft account, I know he's not a high follow-through, because I went in and reorganized a bunch of tags behind him. And so that's why it's important, because then otherwise, then if we have somebody on staff that then you don't really trust to do all that stuff in a particular way better than you, then you just, in the end, end up not giving them that stuff, and then you end up taking it on yourself, which I've done in the past. And so really, I think the importance of the description matching it also with the Colby also is also critical.
Now, it's excellent. Excellent. Well, good stuff. Well, why don't we, you have any other updates? I don't have any updates. I'm just getting back. I was gone. Actually, was in Colorado last week skiing. And on the last day, I came back and visited the Fort Collins property that we picked up. Aaron, I brought on Aaron as a acquisition manager. She's phenomenal. She lives in Denver. We're working primarily the Fort Collins and Colorado Springs market, but she found an amazing deal. I gave you an update on it, Chris, but
mm-hmm.
we're probably going to end up netting about $120K on that deal. It was almost, it's a creative wholesale flip, really.
Mm-hmm.
I picked it up with owner financing. I talked about this a few weeks ago. I'm pretty much just taking over payments. I am having the property cleaned up a bit before we sell it. We're actually, Erin is a real estate agent. She's really good on the phone, and so I'm driving leads. She's working all the leads and putting properties. We got another property under contract last week. It's a small wholesale flip. But this deal, we are going to list it with another realtor, broker, and between Aaron and the broker, they've had the property cleaned up. They found somebody. It's a 2.5 acre parcel, actually 3 parcels with a duplex, and then but it's 2.5 acres, approximately a little under 2.5 acres, zoned industrial. And they brought somebody out with dump trucks and just to clean all the property. We're having a new garage door put on, pressure washed, and some branches on the property trimmed. And they're coordinating everything. It's awesome. I write the check, but really, really good. It's more than just somebody that can talk on the phone. And I love realtors. I think realtors are great as acquisition managers. The only thing I need to now add is I'm going to get an inside sales phone person to work because we got a ton of leads, and Aaron's pretty backlogged. And so she has the ability. She's closing deals on my behalf as the buyer, but she's also taking the pretty houses and bringing those in as listings, and where we get typically taking them as a listing. Usually she's referring the listing to somebody else where we get a commission, and then we just put that right back into marketing for more deals. So I love it, and I'll keep you kind of posted. But I do like realtors that are investor-friendly. Erin's worked with other investors before, and she's fantastic. She's good on the phone, super bubbly, sharp as nails.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, for an acquisition role, I definitely like somebody that is trained in real estate and knows sales, and as opposed to trying to bring somebody from some other trade, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, that's my point. Well, good. You want to open this up? I do see we have more people, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say, if you have a question, go ahead and press *5 on your phone. *5. I was going to open it up, but I think there's enough people that I probably don't want any background noise. So if you've got a question, press *5, and we'll bring you into the call and ask whatever question. And be real estate, marketing, technical. Whatever you'd like. All right. Here's one here. Go ahead and 702 area code, you are live. Las Vegas, 702 area code.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me?
Yes. Who is this?
This is Darius.
Hey, Darius. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. How you doing?
Hey, Darius.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
We're doing awesome. What's up?
Oh, man. I just wanted to talk about as far as the all calls and the return mail.
Yeah.
Basically, I got a shitload of all calls. But
okay.
I'm actually in the process. I had a VA calling them back for me, but I kind of like fired her already because
yep.
She just wasn't efficient enough. And so like that's all I've really been doing lately is like calling all these people back. But unfortunately, though, all of them are like saying they don't want to sell or they're not interested. So.
Okay.
I was just saying, like, what do you suggest as far as, like, because, like, basically, that's all I've really been getting. Like, I probably had, like, 4 mail out so far, and, like, most people are not interested. So I just, like, you know, been putting them in my portfolio, like, as follow-ups. But I'm just, man, I'm kind of, like, frustrated, man.
So how many – go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to ask, so how many total mailers had you done or not? You said you dropped 4 times?
Yeah, like 725 each one.
725 each one times 4, right?
Yeah.
So 725 times 4, and then what was the market that you're in right now?
I'm in Las Vegas, Clark County.
Yeah. Las Vegas, 3,000 mailers. So about 3,000 mailers. I think Las Vegas, I always think about Las Vegas in the same concept as South Florida in terms of, because it's 725 times 4, you have about 2,900, 3,000 mailers. In your experience, when you had done direct mail before, had you done direct mail before? Okay, and so what I'm trying to gauge at is how is, so you sent out 3,000 cards, and so how, do you have like numbers from what you were doing it before in terms of how many cards or how many mailers you were sending out in order to be able to get a deal?
Well, before, when I was doing it myself, I got two deals in like, well, the first deal I got was in like my first mail out. And then mm-hmm. the second deal took about 2 more months. So I think, and my response rate was kind of low, though. It was probably around like 1% or so.
So you had done three deals. You did two deals, the first deal and the second deal. And then the first deal, you got the first mail out, and the second deal, you got, it took you 2 more months, right, to get that deal.
Yeah.
So how many, between the first, you know, if you combine the total mailings that you did for the first deal and the second deal, how many did you mail out? How many, was it postcards or letters, and how many did you mail out?
Yeah, it was postcards, and I was doing about close to 2,000 a month, maybe like 1,800 a month, something like that.
So 1,800 a month times, So that means that by the time you got your first deal and the two more deals, then you had done 1,800 a month times 3 months?
Yep.
Would you say that's accurate? So 1,800 times 3 is 5,400. So one of the things, so in other words, in order for you to do those three deals, you had to do 5,400 mailings, right, in order to. One you got right away, the other one it took a little bit more. And so the reason I ask that is because, like in our local market, I gotta see what our numbers are, but I think it's close to 6,000 mailings to be able to get a deal. And every market is different, right? So in other words, it comes down to, like, in our market, it takes 6,000 mailers, so that means that sometimes, let's say, if you come into my market, you're doing a brand new campaign, you might score a deal the first 500 mailings, right? And then score no deals or score the next deal at the 5,500, or it could be all over the place, right? And so the reason I ask that is because I don't, in a market like Vegas, I think 3,000 pieces, I would continue monitoring it again, you know, closely, but it may be that it just kind of be lucky to draw in the sense that you haven't gotten a deal yet because the numbers are not there yet, right? It provided, obviously, that, and this is something we can look at with a campaign dashboard, but, you know, obviously, calling all the sellers back, calling all the hang-ups, obviously, which I think you're doing based on our conversation here, making sure you're sending pre-sale packages, et cetera. And then the other thing that I find is that now we're finding that more of our deals are coming in. You know, before, this is maybe 3 or 4 years ago, you do a mailing, you snag one deal, just one or two deals right off the bat, and then you get some other ones that are trickle of effect. And I find that now it's kind of like the opposite. It's like we do a mailing, and it's, you know, we may not get that deal right off the first one, but it ends up being 30 days later after we talk to them a couple of times, after, you know, the situation has derailed a little bit more. And all of a sudden, now they're in a position where they need to sell. So the thing that I would recommend, and you tell me, Gary, if you agree or not, but I would say, you know, we could pull a dashboard just to see, hey, what do the numbers look like? Do we see anything visually that might have us say, hey, you know what, there might be something here wrong. If we don't see that, then I would say you've maybe got a couple more cycles in terms of drops, and then for us to maybe revisit, you know, with an account review. But I think you're kind of at that threshold where you should start to see, but if you go another 3,000 and you don't get anything, then at that point then I would say, yeah, maybe let's look a little bit deeper. Any thoughts on that, Gary?
Yeah, I'm actually – Darius, what I would do is I would go to REI Vault, go out to the website, go to reivault.com/review.
Uh-huh.
And there's a quick video and schedule an account review. The team's going to pull a dashboard so we can actually look at the metrics and spend some time and then get on a, you'll have an opportunity to schedule a call and we should go through this. I'm looking at your numbers first and foremost off of the mailing you've done. You had 253 phone calls, 73 leads. 16 of those are looking like they were viable, which means the seller raised their hand and said, yeah, I'd be interested possibly in selling my house.
Right.
All the numbers in terms of the numbers, the raw numbers, all look correct, what I would expect around the country. And as I'm going through and I'm looking at some of these leads, I think it's more of the sales process. I think you're missing some opportunity. Like I'm looking at Ronaldo Barnett that came in 12 days ago.
Right.
It looks like it was a converted from a hang-up, but it, you know, it looks like they want to move and sell ASAP. They gave a price of what they're looking for, and I see a follow-up in May, and I would be making them an offer. I'd be putting them I'd be getting them into follow-up and working, so I'd be in an account review. I'd be wanting to spend some time talking about your sales process of what are you doing with these people, the phone, what's it look like, what questions are you asking them, and are you missing some opportunities and just saying I'm going to put them on the follow-up and talk to them in 3 months versus trying to get them an offer and schedule an appointment to go meet with them and get that deal done, you know what I mean? I was looking at another one that just came in. It was a lead that was viable. In fact, I'll tell you which one it is. It looked like it came in 5 days ago. I don't see any activity. Beltran Jose, that came in. That one came in 25 days ago, and I'm not seeing any activity on that at all. But still. It looks like it hasn't been touched. And then Gina Baca, that was the one that came in 5 days ago. And they want to build more equity in the home. What are you asking for the property? They've got some tenants, but I don't see any activity on that. So I would like to
see,
you know, we'd want to chat with you on the sales process because you may be missing opportunities.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that Gene guy, I remember him. I just actually sent him a credibility kit, like, for a possible lease purchase. So he's like, because he's like, you know, he wants to build equity in his property, so that's why I was trying to do something creative with him.
Yeah, subject to. Give him an offer. Give him $5,000 or whatever it is to say, hey, what if I were able to give you X number of dollars and you're out? I mean, there's lots of ways. You might be able to do something like that. Here's what I would do, Darius. I would go to reivault.com/review and fill out the questionnaire, schedule some time, and then we can talk one-on-one with Chris
okay.
or myself or somebody.
Okay.
That would be, then we can give you some one-on-one attention and look at this a lot closer and we'll have to get you closing some deals.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yep, that's cool.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
All right, we'll chat with you. All
right, perfect.
I'm gonna bring looks like Justin is putting his hand up. Justin, you're live.
Hello?
Hey Justin.
Hey. Are you guys getting feedback or is this okay?
Good. We're good.
It's good.
Okay.
You're good.
Okay. I have three things today, so I'll take them from maybe what I'll call shortest to longest maybe. The first one is quick. Gary, I've got a seller who called me, husband died 60 days ago, too much house too much house, two kids who are going to graduate, one's graduating high school, one's graduating college, she's going to be ready to sell in the spring. I don't want to send her an offer because we haven't even looked at it yet, but isn't there a button that I can click that will get her out of the postcards and into some sort of more touchy-feely mail piece?
Yes. So
which one
is that? In Podio,
yeah.
Under the direct mail field,
Yeah.
It says send STL follow-up letters.
Okay, and that's a softer, more touchy-feely thing?
Yeah, and if you can see what the letter says, that converts. I would do that. If you want to push it, if you want it to go out immediately, then just click that button. If you want to push it out a month or two, you can schedule the date right before you click send STL follow-up letters, and then it'll say when you want it to begin, which is a field right below that.
Okay.
And with the date, you can put the date, and it's monthly follow-up letters. We send 8 of them, so it'll take them off the postcard and put them on the follow-up. I would do that with any, if you've got anybody that someday maybe, I would always put them on the follow-up.
You mean if you had a good conversation with them and you want to?
Yeah,
okay. All right.
Absolutely. Even if you haven't, even if they left a message and you do have their address, I would never send people postcards. I would, if you've got somebody's address to call, I would always put them on a follow-up letter.
Well, and what's our price per piece on that letter?
I think it's $1.59.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about the cost. You don't have to send a lot of those to make money.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried about the cost, but I'm almost everybody, I'm just going straight to the offer. So I'm getting them off the postcard, and I'm just getting them onto the offer. But this woman's a little bit different.
Yeah.
She needs to be massaged for this. Okay, yeah. All right, that answers that question. So my next question,
Chico, this would probably be something to discuss together, possibly on one of these calls. The difference on sending somebody, I'm going to mute you out real quick, Justin. We are getting a little background noise. I'll bring you back in. But my take on the follow-up, I think if somebody calls off a postcard, Chico, tell me what your thoughts on this. But if somebody calls off the postcard and you know their address, right, I wouldn't send them another postcard. I would always get them onto the follow-up letter. You know, we'll talk about the offer, but really the whole idea is you take them from one bucket to the next. The follow-up letter is going to make you more money. It costs more money, but if somebody's put up their hand, and my take is if they're way out of the price, if they're way out of the price range, let's say they want $300,000, and you need to buy that property at $150,000. Sometimes, and Chris, I'd like your opinion on this, but maybe they're not ready for a contract offer yet. Put them on the follow-up letter, because if the follow-up letter, it's going to be a handwritten-looking letter that says, "Hey, we recently spoke. You know, dear Martha, you know, this is Justin. We recently spoke about buying your property. And I'm not sure if your other options have worked out, but I'm still interested. And, you know, please call me preferably within the next 3 to 5 days. And then there, at the bottom of the letter, it says, P.S., if your house is no longer for sale, please let me know." NEP still gets about a 20% plus response rate. So I would be moving people that direction to a follow-up letter. Your chances, I've shared this story, but the house I'm living in California came off of that. It was a lady that wanted to be removed from the list. I called her, calmed her down, put her on the follow-up, called her. I never called her again. I sent her 3 follow-up letters, and she called me on the 3rd follow-up letter, at, you know, 90 days from the time that I originally spoke to her, and I bought the house with a couple hundred grand of equity in it. So I'd be very focused on getting people into follow-up. You're missing opportunities. Chris?
I would agree, I guess, with an asterisk. I think if the seller is sitting in a house in Afghanistan and we're trying to get him out, we've been throwing hand grenades at him. So Gary comes and says, "Hey, I think we should do the tank." And I say, "Sure, but let's still throw them hand grenades just in case." So that's the best. That's my answer.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I know that there's a cost savings, right, there's a cost savings by not sending them postcards. If you think about the margins that we operate in, which are substantial relative to other type of businesses, you know, that I still send, and I send everything I can, the more the merrier, you know?
Yeah.
Because sometimes they confuse. They're like, "Oh, I don't like this offer." that they sent me, and I don't like the paperwork. So I'm just going to call it this new postcard that I got. And then I called the postcard, and it happened to be you. So it's like this, you know, it's like you got this big net, and no matter where they try to go, you still got them, and you still bring them in. My thought.
Yep. I think of it as a big funnel, right? The top of the funnel, the bit is the list, right? The names and addresses of the targeted properties in the zip code, right? That's the top of the funnel. At the bottom of the funnel are deals that we make money on. So we send postcards to that list, right? Refines it to the people that call us. And then once they call us, it's a combination of follow-up letters, follow-up phone calls, and offers. And continue to work that pipeline over the long haul, right? So if you got 50,000 potential properties that we're working, and you know we're mailing, and then we're working that follow-up process, and a lot of it's just going to take, you know, you got to talk to the sellers 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. We use direct mail, follow-up letters, and contracts as a way to get us back on the phone, right? And you get some easy low-hanging fruit. But it's just the process. That's always the way marketing works. So I would be very focused on getting, I mean, a someday maybe with a heartbeat and a property you want to buy, and you talk to them, put them on a follow-up. Justin, I've unmuted your line again.
Yeah, are you still getting the feedback?
A little bit. Go ahead.
No. Okay. So my next question is, I'll
take you off my Bluetooth. So my next question is, Chris, you know that I am working on a seller presentation for an in-home presentation. And, we have a mutual friend that you're nice enough to share, some of their strategies in it. One of the things in that presentation, was three key statistics. Days on market.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Days on market.
Yeah, so days on market, ratio of list price to sold price, and the third one was, what was it? Days on market, ratio of list, days on, I don't remember the third statistic right now. I'm driving in my car. Sorry, guys. Anyway, two of the three so in this other person's presentation, those statistics were in his favor. In other words, they were trending over time. Like, he did a six-month rolling average. Days on market kept getting longer. List-to-price ratio kept getting lower. On the three metrics that I have, only one of them is in my favor. Two of them are in the seller's favor. Would you still include them in the presentation and just sort of speak around them, or would you bury them from the presentation because the stats aren't trending in your favor?
I would say I have a third option for you.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. I used to follow Craig Proctor, who was a real estate agent in Canada, and he had his presentation, and he always used the same statistics, right? And it wasn't a statistic that was very much specific to his market, right? But it was a kind of a broad statistic. I guess my question is, I would figure out how to get that statistic, right? Because in other words, what you're finding, you want to present to the seller a particular case. And so not saying that you're going to lie about the statistics, but are there other ways of looking at the data that may well present the statistic that you need? So you're looking at it in your particular market, but does the statistic change as you go further and further out? If you look at the Canadian market as a whole, where is that stat is? And so maybe your market, maybe in your market, that stat may not be favorable, but maybe when you look at it from a bigger perspective, you know, nationwide, maybe that number could be in your favor. And so, you know, do you generalize it or make it, you know, can you generalize it to make it sway your way one way or the other? That would be my opinion, is to try to figure out what you can do with the data.
Similar to the unemployment economic indicators that are put in front of us on TV, right? I think I would agree with Chris. I mean, you might need to look at the type of properties. You know, maybe the properties that you're trying to buy are all, you know, renovation properties or beat up properties. So maybe you need to reanalyze the numbers, go broad, what have you. You definitely do not want to lie. Your numbers have to actually make sense. You don't want to be challenged on that. But you might have to take a harder look at the way that you're analyzing the data.
The other thing is, okay, this is also, but he presents it in a graph way, but you can also potentially present it in a authoritative a way in sense. Let's say, for example, you know, I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal, and one of their articles said, housing market faces slower growth in 2016, realtors say. So, you know, can you represent the concept of what you're trying to get them to say, yeah, I didn't know that, in a different way? Could it be not in a graph, but perhaps, hey, here's some recent articles recently that kind of lend to the fact that, hey, things are gonna, you know, things are kind of going in the wrong direction, and so it still gives them big picture the same effect, but maybe not in a graphical or in a number sense, but just rather in a, hey, here's what, you know, the Wall Street Journal, here's what, you know, these Bloomberg and all these other places that know what's happening, here's what they're saying. So that's another way to maybe approach sharing that concept with them.
So in other words, for like days on market, rather than say here's the chart, it's over the last year, days on market has fluctuated between 45 and 87 days, depending upon the time of year. That type of.
You could expand the time frame, or you could say, yeah, the other thing, just thinking off the top of my head, you could say, you know what, you know, the days on market has been in the past. You could say, you know, when it was a hot market, days on market were declining. It looks like days on market is, I don't know, is it increasing or decreasing, or is it flat line based on the data that you pulled?
Right. Oh, active listings was the third day, piece of data.
Right. But was it flat lined, or was it trending up or down?
Well, that's the thing. Active listings was decreasing, which obviously means, well, if you have a brain, you realize it means tighter inventory, means better for sellers. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, what do you do with something like active listings?
Yeah.
Would you bury that and not even have that in the presentation?
Well, yeah, if it doesn't work in your favor, I wouldn't include it.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I like what Gary said. You have to think like a politician. You got to make the numbers work for you.
Yeah.
If not, you find the way, you find the articles and the things that make them, you know, look at things in the way that you see it, because you could look at it either way, right?
Yeah, for sure.
If it doesn't help you, don't put it on there.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the answer I was looking for, Gary. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, do I have time for my third issue?
Do it.
Okay, so we had a deal last year. It was a probably 8-month sales cycle from first contact to close of escrow. It was a $50,000 assignment fee. The seller's name was Peter. Peter owned a second property 2 doors down on the same side of the street, and we had a verbal agreement on that deal. I kept pushing him for the contract, and he kept saying his dad, who had passed away, had like a ton of old cars and junk, and he needed to go through all of his dad's belongings. Anyway, it was a situation where we closed this one right before Christmas. And I've been sort of, you know, just, hey, Peter, how's it going, checking in once a week type of thing, not wanting to push him too hard to push him away, but stay in front of him. And then last week, never heard a peep from him. Talked to him yesterday, and he says, you know, hey, Justin, I think I'm going to have to go in a different direction on the other property. What happened? Well, I've had a few other offers considerably higher than yours. What happened? It turns out that the cash buyer whom I sold the closed deal to, whose name is Freddie,
mm-hmm.
Freddie, like a freaking cowboy, goes and bangs on the door, speaks to the stepmom who lives there. Hey, I just bought this, and now I want to buy this. The stepmom gives the phone number to my seller, Peter.
Yeah.
Peter speaks to the guy, and Peter, as Peter described to me, he said, hey, I thought that was sort of shady the way this guy did that and sort of went behind your back. However, I got an offer from a Chinese group of investors that is $110,000 more than you're willing to pay. We were at $275,000. The Chinese investors came in at $385,000. And I said to them, basically, I don't think there's any way that we could match or beat that. You know, but I'll let you know for sure. And we ran the numbers again today. I mean, for us, just to make a couple of bucks, we probably have to get it around 350 or 360. So two things. A, what do I do with the seller? And B, what do I do with my ding-dong cash buyer who's trying to circumvent me?
Chico, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
On the Chinese buyer piece, what I would do is I'd create what's called FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I do this on all these types of deals. I would go back to the seller and maybe put a little presentation together for him of justifying your numbers. Just say, hey, I just wanted to give you some data. I really appreciate, you know, the fact that we were able to work together, and I wanted to get back to you. And I want you to know that there's no way we could do that. I don't actually think this other buyer could do it either. And I've done a little research on this other buyer. And what I've seen and I've heard is they'll come in and try to lock up your property at a much higher price. And then when you're ready to close, they'll try to renegotiate with you. And I just wanted you to know that because there's a high likelihood that they're not going to close. And I just thought from an integrity perspective, I wanted to give that information to you. And if that does happen, I'd love the opportunity to work with you again. You know that I say what I do and I do what I say. And I'd love the opportunity to work with you. And but if that happens, you know, please call me. And then I would put him on a follow-up letter, and I'd keep in touch with him very closely over the next 3 to 4 weeks. Because you're probably going to get that deal. They're going to renegotiate. That Chinese buyer is going to renegotiate with them 100%. 100%. And then as soon as they try to renegotiate, that seller may come back to you just because you created that sense. They may get pissed off, and it doesn't matter what the offer is with the Chinese buyer. They'll pull the plug, and you'll own the deal. So that's what I would do. Chris?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, in essence, this I would say the same thing. The only thing you could do is you could phrase it as a story. That would be the only difference. The presentation, in other words, hey, you know, that's interesting. You know, I just bought a house from a seller that also had a Chinese cash buyer. And the reason I bought the house is because they actually, you know, so you tell it like a story, and they kind of get it as well, but indirectly. But it's the same. I would agree with Gary.
Yeah. I think you still got a chance at that deal, Justin, I think. But you've got to be there. They're not going to call you. The seller is probably not going to call you without you keeping in touch with them. I'd create that story really fast, and just tell them that hey, you've tried to make it work. You don't think that there's any possible way, and then you know either tell them the story or tell them that you did some research on that buyer, and they typically come in, they offer some you know ridiculous price, they get the seller excited, and then at the 11th hour they'll try to renegotiate it, and. And, you know, just make sure that you're there, and you're the good guy, right? Coming in with the good news.
But now with your buyer, so your buyer, you know, is that your buyer? That was your buyer. Is that a buyer that you've worked with before? Or no.
We just closed a deal with him on Friday as well. That would have been so. The one that I'm talking about now was the first one we closed with him in December, and then he's bought a second deal from us here last week.
But I mean, did he? You know, he knocked on the seller's door. Was he doing that in a way of circumventing you, or did he do that just because he was being aggressive and he thought, hey, that might be an opportunity for me?
So, I don't know if I unequivocally told him I can get the thing two doors down. I don't honestly. I don't remember, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That would be my question, because you know, if he just saw a shitty house down the street and said, "Hey, I'm gonna knock on the door,"
"Hey, I just bought this from two doors over. Do you want to sell this one as well?"
Right, and he knew that they were the same owner, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on if you told him, because if you did tell him, "Hey, I can get you that house next door," and then he went and then decided to knock on the door, that's one thing. If you never told him anything and he just saw, "Oh, shit, that's the owner there, let me try and see if I could buy that deal," you know, that's, I think that's different. I don't know.
Justin, why didn't you had a verbal acceptance, right? Agreement on price?
Yeah.
Why didn't you get something under contract?
Because I kept pressuring the guy. He's like, no, I want to get it cleaned out. He's a very deliberate guy. This guy drives a truck. He leaves for work at 9 o'clock. He comes home at 9 a.m. He goes to sleep around 11. Like, it's, trust me, I tried a million times. Not a million times, but I tried once a week, and it was to the point where I felt like had I have pushed any harder, I would have pushed him away.
Gotcha. I gotcha. I don't know. From my
perspective, the point is, do I just let it go with this buyer?
Let it go.
Call my buyer and say,
I would let it go because he's still buying deals from you.
Silence is golden.
Do I let him know that this has happened?
No. Silence is golden. I wouldn't say anything to the buyer. You know,
right.
You just have to. I wouldn't say anything to the buyer. There's nothing good that can come out of this. There's nothing good that can come out of you saying anything to the buyer. You're better off keeping that to yourself and maybe use it as an opportunity. If you have a situation like this, you know, communicate it to the buyer on the front end. You know, it's like,
okay.
Hey, I find a lot of deals. You know, do you want to work? You know, it's.
I have another idea, though. So this property, the buyer, your buyer, right, is in the mix, but there's also a Chinese buyer in the mix, right?
My buyer who circumvented me, my seller has already told me he thought that guy was shady for doing that, and he doesn't want to do business with him. So he's dead.
Oh, interesting.
By the way, you could
bring that up to the buyer instead of saying, "Hey, asshole," use the language. I just wanted to give you some feedback. That deal, I was working on that deal, and this is what I heard.
You killed it for both of us.
But you have to do it in a nice way. Like, you don't want to reprimand him, but you say, "Gosh, that deal, I just wanted to give you some feedback. That deal that I was trying to get for you, the seller actually went sideways, and here's what his comment was." But you gotta be real careful on your position coming into that call. Because if you got a buyer, right? But if you use it as a lesson for him in a nice way, right? It's not like you're reprimanding him, but you're basically just saying, "Gosh, you know, I just want to give you some feedback. That deal I was working on trying to get, they went to another buyer. And part of it was, you know, when you called him, he got irritated because he thought that was not cool." And from my perspective, you know, it is what it is, but, you know, right?
I don't know. My comment is that unless there's a somewhat concrete outcome that you are trying to get, that's such a touchy conversation, because if it's not going to do anything to revive the deal and he's completely out of the picture, I'm almost say like you just let it go, because then he's still buying stuff from you. You don't want to get into a pissing match and all of a sudden now he's no longer your buyer, and he could be a buyer and for other stuff. So unless you really got something that you can say, I have that conversation.
This buyer, we just added a zip code that we would normally have never added, but this guy claims that he's bought 40 deals in his zip code. It's sort of like the boonies of San Diego, like out in the far eastern part of the county. And we added the zip code just because of this guy. So otherwise, we would never in a million years market in that zip code.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll keep my mouth shut, and maybe I'll save it for a rainy day when I need to.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring there's one more question. It looks like Art, and then we'll wrap up. Art, you are live.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, just wheeling and dealing, moving and grooving, writing deals and selling properties. What else?
Awesome.
Is that it? What are you doing?
Art,
he's such a slacker.
Chico, Art and Justin, I've got somebody I'm gonna ask for you guys to talk with briefly. I'm working to hire somebody that actually would be really good for REI Vault for where we're kind of heading. I'd love for you to chat with her. Her name is Julia. So if I send an email or you get a text message from Julia, I'd really like to have you and a few others. I've got probably 6 or 7 people to talk to Julia. She's going to be asking you questions of what else you want and need and your perspective about REI Vault and where else, you know, what do you want. I'd really like you guys to just give her honest feedback and let her know good things, bad things, what else you want to see, your business, et cetera. And because Julia is going to be one of those advocates for us getting more stuff done. Julia's closed a couple hundred real estate deals. She knows creative real estate. I mean, she can do subject to and owner financing in her sleep. And I've worked with her. I've known her for 10, 15 years. She lives in the center part of the country without giving it away. But I'd love for you guys just to chat with her because she'll be really good for you guys and for all of us. So anyway, with that, Art, go for it. What's your question?
My question is this, and I guess, Chris, you and I had chatted, I don't know, Friday, Saturday, whenever, regarding the two properties that I sold and the
mm-hmm.
verbiage, to be careful about how I had the verbiage to collect my assignment fee. So what I did when I structured the assignment fee for those two deals was I got the seller to pay me a couple $1,000. I got my buyer to pay me $15,000, and I got that on both deals. Okay, now, I don't know. I'm in uncharted waters on this. I really am, and I don't like not being in control. That just goes against every grain of my body. So I don't know how to control the deal and how to write up this contract so that I don't get my tit in a ringer, you know, if I get audited by somebody down the road. I just don't know how to do it.
Are you doing it as an... Go ahead, Gary.
Are you... Who's signing, who's the buyer on the contract?
Yeah, the way it's going to be done on a lease option where, you know, they're going to put down X amount of dollars and I'm supposed to be meeting with their closing attorney to structure this, but I don't know how to put that verbiage in there unless just put it in an individual line that the seller is going to pay me $2,000, the buyer is going to pay me $15,000. I'm not sure.
So you've got to have an interest in the deal. Otherwise, you could be by the Department of Real Estate. You could be a realtor, and that would be an infraction of the law. So an interest in the property typically has to do with an interest in the contract. So if you're not actually on the contract, you definitely have to do it properly. That would be my first thing. You could be hired as a consultant. So you could actually be a consultant for the buyer. I almost think we take this one off. Chico, you may have some questions and can answer quicker, but I almost think we take this one off, understand it in a little bit more detail, Art, for real quick, you know, within the next 24 hours or sooner, right? And
do you have agreements already that you signed?
No. The buyer is he wants me to meet with his attorney, closing attorney, okay,
mm-hmm.
to structure this deal. So I don't want to go in looking like a dickhead, and that's how I feel right now because I just don't know how to do this.
So, I don't want to say something with limited information and head you down the wrong path. But
could you lay out something like you can send? I was thinking he could send something that we could both look at through deal. How he would kind of outline kind of like what the scenario is and the numbers, or
I don't have all that detail. Okay, that's what we're supposed to be ironing out with you know the buyer. Okay, and you know then I'm going to end up presenting that to my seller, and they you know I've already told them it's going to be done on terms, which and they're fine with it. You know they're fine with that. So I just don't. I know I have to have an interest in this in some way, shape, or form. My contract that I initially had them sign is, you know, my standard agreement. You know, Baron Mortgage Corp is purchasing from Swiss Elm Management to XYZ Corporation for $300,000, $200,000, whatever, and $500,000 ones. You know, they're all standard, and that's my interest. Okay, and I understand that.
When's your meeting?
It hasn't been scheduled yet, but it's going to be sometime this week.
Yeah, part, you could write up something for Chris and I about the deal. Just, it could be bullet points. It doesn't have to take a lot of work, but just give us a data dump of the deal and the profit and the type of scenario. You know, what are you trying to do and what the stuck is, what you need help with. Just list it out. It just shouldn't take you more than 15 minutes. It's faster than us getting on a phone and trying to do it on the fly. That's why we're asking. Give us a link to the Podio lead so we can look at it, right? And then we're either going to build a video or provide you details or say, hey, let's get on the phone and work this out. There's definitely a way to get this done, and we just want to do it in a formalized process, right? If a couple of ways you could do it, you could take a consulting fee from the buyer. You could actually be on the contract and then assign it. There's four or five different ways to do this, but you don't want to go into that meeting, as you know. The reason you're feeling a little angst is you don't want to go in the meeting with an attorney and not know the position. You've got to know the way you want to do it before you walk in there, right? You want
Correct.
To have, here's what you want to do so you can drive the meeting. Otherwise, that thing is going to go sideways and they're going to sidewank you and knock you out of the deal and go direct to the seller. So if you just take 15 minutes, give us a data dump, send it to DealHelp@REIVault. We'll jump on it and then we'll tell you the next step. It might be a phone conversation.
Okay.
Just, you know, bullet point, you know, high level. You got to give us the link to the lead and then tell us every possible thing that is relevant to the deal. You know, tell us the purchase price, the situation, and the creativity that you're trying to structure. Just, and then we'll give you how we would do it, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Hey, I think we're definitely over. Chico, I know you got to jump.
Yeah.
And great call. Very few, not a ton of people on today's call, but thanks for the interaction. And Art, send that over to us as soon as you can. We'll jump on it. Everyone, have a great week, and we'll chat with you next week.